You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You know what I want?
Not Samson, Greg. Not Samson. Not
what? Not Samson.
Hey, that's pretty good. The Raptors defeat the Washington Wizards 130 to 122. That's two games in a row, two wins. I don't know if the pizza party thing is every time they win three games. I suspect it isn't. It'd be a little bit pathetic, to be quite honest with you. But the jokes are still flying regardless. Because the three-game win streak, it would be way more fun if it was like called a pizza party now. It's like the Raptors get a pizza party. It doesn't exist in actuality, but it's like a saying. You know, it's like a baker's dozen is 13. Three wins is a pizza party. That's kind of what we're rocking with now. The Raptors, they win a game that they dominated thoroughly. Like it, they play the free throw game. You do all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they only win by eight, but this game they had comfortably across the section of it all. I mean, one of the oddest things in this game was that Johnny Davis started. Played 6 minutes, was a minus 16, and didn't register anything except, I guess, a block. Kind of strange. But on the Raptors side of things, you get at least 25 and 4 from, or honestly, 25 and 5 from four different players quickly: Gary Trent Jr., Kelly Olynyk, and RJ Barrett. So the guys who are meant to be doing good stuff in this game, the guys are meant to carry them to wins, especially against teams the likes of the Wizards, like Vukcevic. You didn't hear that wrong. It's not Nikola Vucevic on the other side. It's Tristan Vukcevic, just a very similar name. It's like, was it Jovic and Jokic, right? Corey Kispert had a pretty good game. Jordan Poole got a lot of shots up. I thought that he playmade pretty well out of the pick and roll. He was not so bad. Denny Avdija had like insane volume in this game, but really the Wizards didn't get much from their bench. Their front court had a really tough night tonight, and the Raptors, I mean, they bludgeoned them on the inside. Even if they weren't making all the shots there, you still have like Emmanuel quickly getting to the line for 10 free throw attempts, Barrett for 6, Ochai for 6, Kelly gets there 4 times. Like, the Raptors, a healthy 28 free throw attempts. They shot okay from 3. Nothing blows you away, but 11 makes on 35-36% and 51% from the floor overall. They got into the paint. Guys like RJ and quickly drove them there. A guy like Gary, honestly, in the middle of the floor, not always the paint, but sometimes the mid-range, getting to comfortable spots, making some shots from there. So we're looking at a team that got comfortable. Started out the first quarter, what was it, like 42-19? So that was 42-17. And then, of course, it was the terrible run. MJ Barrow says, "Samson, hi, WTF the second quarter. Can you explain what happened? I understand runs and highs and lows, but that looked more like a witch's curse or something." Yeah. Shot variance is a thing. That was part of it. The Raptors did something early on where they pushed off of every single miss, and the Wizards' transition defense I thought was terrible early. The Wizards were also playing a lineup that was not all of their best players early on. Like I said, Johnny Davis got a shot at it. And then so the Wizards kind of, they got into some of their better lineups later on in the game, whereas the Raptors, they started out with their best. You have all the guys started, like Gary is one of the best players, Emmanuel, one of the best players, RJ, one of the best players, Kelly, one of the best players, and Ochai, despite being, you know, a pretty large negative on offense, is still a guy who definitely you would consider, you know, his defense helps carry his value out on the floor, his impact. And even still, like, getting to the line a few times, 9 points is, you know, not great, especially on, like, 7 shots, you know, I think 10 used possessions. It's nothing you want to, like, celebrate. But Yeah, he cuts, he finds his way to some impact on that end at the very least. And it's just, so for starters, better lineups from the Wizards, worse lineups from the Raptors. That's kind of what we're looking at. Jacob Tarasov says Johnny Davis got hurt. Oh, that, there you go. Egg on my face. I didn't even know, to be quite honest with you. Oh, I should have asked about that after the game then. I didn't know. I thought maybe they were just like, well, regardless, the team played better with him off the court. Kind of funny. So thank you for alerting me to that, Jacob. On top of that, though, we're looking at a Raptors team that some of the variants changed for them. Some of the lineups got a little bit worse, but also they weren't pushing as often in transition, which was really what they were doing so much at the start of the game. The pace of the game slowed down. The Raptors' shots started getting a little bit more difficult. And a credit to the Wizards, there was a little bit more switching above the break. They kept the play above the break more often, less of these dives to the rim. And the Raptors also not as easily tethered to like Kelly Olynyk, having to work through some of their handoffs and dribble creation instead of the high post stuff. It's a little bit unfamiliar for them. And, you know, that's stuff guys have to work on. That's stuff guys have to develop, of course. So it's not a super big deal. But, yeah, real nasty run. And you know what? It came back around, right, too. Like, yes, they only ended up scoring 21 points in the second quarter. But they did find their way to it. And it was, like, what, the first like, 4 or 5 minutes, they scored, like, what, between 2 and 5 points? Not a lot. So I think transition was a big thing. Not being able to have a hub to work out of, especially as far as like getting below the break and using those entry passes for the off-ball cutting actions that they like, it changed what they were trying to do offensively, and they got stuck. And when they get stuck, that's tough. Jacob Tarasov says, do you know what happened to Dick? Yeah, Grady, he has a groin injury. I don't expect it to be bad. They called it a contusion. So a groin contusion means like, a contusion to me means bruising. That's always what I've understood it as, you know. One time I got hit in the face with a hockey stick and my chin started swelling up. And we went to the hospital, or like whatever the equivalent of the hospital was at that time. See if there was a bone chip, because there was like a, you know, they call it what, a loose body. In OG's elbow or whatever, loose bodies. We thought it was a piece of my chin or something like that. And the doctor was like, what the hell are you talking about? It's a hematoma. And this is bruising under the skin. I don't know, contusion, bruising, hematoma. I'm not sure about all of the terminology, but I think Grady will be fine. I don't think it was super, super serious, just hanging out. But on Grady, to keep it there, I thought that he played a really nice game, like just kind of plugging in, working off of the other guys. We've obviously seen quite a few games. It's like maybe like 25% of games he walks in there and he's really going to be overmatched. And he is, as a guy trying to create off of the dribble. That wasn't what he was told he was going to be doing this season. It's not a recipe for success very often, but as far as Grady, he'll have a game every once in a while where he pops off, where the shooting is good enough. That's kind of what we've been watching, is like some really bad games where the efficiency is down, turnovers are high, a lot of possessions end up in nothing. He'll pick up the dribble too early. He's not able to keep advantages, all that kind of stuff. But he's a rookie playing a role and a style that he wasn't really told he was going to be doing, and one that doesn't fit his game very well necessarily. You know, we'll have to see his future. He gets to progress and try things for however long, and we'll see if he becomes, you know, somewhat of a tertiary on-ball guy. Would be interesting with the way he's able to pass the ball at times and the fact that he can shoot off the pole. And also when you consider like his touch at the rim, like we saw that big left-handed, he gathered at the free throw line, kept the left hand extended the whole way, soft touch at the rim. Like that kind of stuff is really great to see. There's some seeds in his game that you could see growing into a little bit of creation, but he's overly taxed. In this game, we see a guy who gets to hang out in the periphery, 5 of 9 from the field, 3 of 5 from downtown, 4 boards, no assists, +4, 13 points. Grady was just hanging out, cashing shots, playing in transition. When he had space to push a dribble, push the dribble, but don't put yourself into too many uncomfortable positions. It was a nice game for him. Obviously, He was with an injury. The guys who really drove success in this game, though, I mean, more than anybody else, I would say it was Emmanuel Quickley. Having 31 points, 7 boards, 13 assists is of significant consequence. That is his first 30-10 game as a Raptor. That's, you know, that's a milestone and should be considered as such. He should be celebrated. I don't know who got the chain. I don't know what that's going to end up being, but I thought that Emmanuel Quickley, the ability to get downhill, some of the, like, he had a couple splits in this game too, right? Like, the hedge, they get too wide. The Wizards aren't super, they're not super tight in their defense. They're not very disciplined. He sees ways that he's able to exploit that to get downhill, even just coming off the edge if they're playing, like, at the level or dropping, and they're playing, you know, chase over the top of the defense, you know, lock and trail. Then we're seeing Quickley turn the corner, get a big on, like, flipping his hips, trying to stay with him. You know, they get shoulder to shoulder. He can get to the rim and just throw up a shot, and that's free throws. You know, he's able to mine those. He's able to mine those situations for gold, for points, all that kind of stuff. And that was what the Raptors, a lot of what they were trying to do is. And then also, like, once you provide that pressure out of the pick and roll, then also, or the dribble handoff, something that happens is teams will play more aggressive. And when they play more aggressive, more of those roles pop up. Or even if you have a guy flash higher and you can't make that pass to the roll, you pass to the wing gets it back middle, something happens there. But Quickley, I think this was one of his better playmaking games. There's a lot of manipulation there. And also, you know, to the Wizards, the opposite of credit, they're not a very good defense. They are a porous defense, and Quickley didn't have to extend himself way past expectations to have, like, a really fantastic playmaking game. The Wizards present themselves as a defense that can be beaten, certainly. And he was the bludgeon, the tool for bludgeoning that the Raptors used in this game. And he was able to open up the defense and get into a lot of dangerous spots on the floor. And even when he wasn't, we saw, like, we saw portions of this game where RJ Barrett really was the guy who was getting downhill, taking that last step, really and quickly. Like, the Wizards overextend themselves above the break in their pick and roll defense, or as far as, like, their dribble handoff defense, getting too high. That means if RJ gets to turn the corner, it really is just him and the last man at the bottom. That, if he can beat that guy down there at the rim, easy peasy. But that also leaves, like, a whole heap of opportunities for him to make these laydown passes to guys in the dunker spot or cutting from the corner or a 45 cut. And honestly, like, I think guys have learned quite well that RJ will get to the rim and do so often. And then on top of that, I mean, we're talking about RJ, who's made significant steps as a playmaker, whether that's play style or a change in his own, you know, decision making. Up for debate. Whatever a person really thinks is, you know, it's kind of opaque. I wrote about it, and I thought it was mostly a change in decision-making because I thought that it was different than what we were seeing with the Knicks. But, you know, when I asked RJ about it, he said he hadn't changed anything. So, and he did credit, you know, Darko and the system. So, them's the breaks, you know. That's what it could be. He's able to play make in those situations. Obviously, 6 turnovers in this game isn't the best, but still, to be able to take that on the chin, the creation load, get the Raptors through some of the low points in this game, you just have to be happy. And then, of course, like, Kelly and Gary, when RJ and Emmanuel were off, you know, healing themselves in various ways, when they weren't around to play, like, the only semblance of consistency was that Grady was going to play minutes, of course, and who knows what's going to happen there, but you expect to see it each game. But Kelly Olynyk was going to provide, like, a handful of passes that, you know, created buckets. Gary was going to shoot the ball quite a bit, and he was going to get to, you know, a certain amount of points per game. And the Raptors had to rely on those things to remain, like, somewhat competitive. And on top of that, I think that we're looking at, like, the bones of the offense are really with Kelly. You can see what the Raptors are trying to do game to game. You saw it in this one. So much of what the Raptors do is, you know, and Kelly is in a good spot
to take advantage of these things, but as a keeper to punish teams if they want to step, like on a dribble handoff, if they want to step the big up, it either creates a lane for Kelly as a driver or sometimes creates a switch for him to start like a bully drive against a smaller player. And Kelly is a good enough passer to play make from the top as a set passer or on the move as he's kind of rumbling towards the rim. Those little wraparound laydowns that he can make to cutters. Ochai has scored on a bunch of those this year. So Kelly operating things above the break. I thought that, you know, it's been a pretty good run of play for Kelly lately, especially considering that, like, he played really great. He's played better defense lately, which I like. I like seeing some good defense, especially since, like, there are definitely games where we don't see much of it. And today's game wasn't, like, fantastic defense or anything like that. But there were a lot of possessions in this game. 122 to the Wizards. Nothing to write home about, but the Raptors certainly didn't implode. And Gary, just getting shots up. And honestly, the 5 assists, very nice to see. He's making, like when he gets middle, he's a little bit more patient in the middle now than he used to be. And there used to be a time where he would really get into like finishing off of one foot in the middle of the court, that he would try and gather, take step with his right foot first, end up on his left leg. Fader. Bad shot. Now he's more so realizing like, no matter if I take that 2 steps, or if I get into a jump stop, I'm not getting past the guy's hips necessarily. So what does he do? He takes that jump stop in the lane, maintains his pivot afterwards, and that pivot can result in him finding an open three-point shooter behind him because the defense has collapsed. Usually spraying to the corner is not really in his bag, but like a little lay down, if he gets the low man to kind of jump out to defend, that's there. But most of all, it's just like a little turnaround jumper that he's comfortable making from a triple threat. Well, I guess it's not triple threat. It's just a pivot because triple threat means you could shoot, pass, or dribble. And there's no dribble because the dribble's dead. So that's nice to see. As far as like the bench stuff, Bruce Brown, stolen inbounds pass, was pretty like crafty hanging around and shaping up off of drives as a cutter. And he finishes with 9 points in like pretty short order. This wasn't Javon's game, man. This was not Javon's game. And, you know, them's the breaks. Garrett, a couple, like, he had a layup in this one. Cashed the corner triple, too. That was nice to see. But, yeah, Grady was the biggest story off the bench. And the Raptors, like, it wasn't the deepest game. Like, 36 minutes from RJ, almost 28 from Ochai, 34, almost 35 from Kelly, 35 from Gary, 36.5 from Quickly. Like, the guys played. They really did. And I don't know how important it was to these guys to win this one. I mean, we talked to Emmanuel after the game, and he was saying, I think it was Doug asked him how important it is, you know, to win games at the end of the season to try and get some momentum. And I mean, he said it was important. I think it is important to some degree. It's just like, it's just, you don't know whether they're from the top down what the franchise wants, because they could win a couple games. I don't know what the plan is against the Pacers, but we might see some rest. We might see like knee soreness. We might see stuff like that. So the players, when they're out there, they want to win the games. And even when they're losing, that's what they want. It's just like, you know, these are, they go out there, they compete, they do their best. And I'm glad that like they got a pretty healthy look at what they wanted to be tonight. And they got a lot of really fun performances, like mostly IQ, Gary, Kelly, RJ, and Grady as well. I think it was pretty fun. We have a question from Rahul that says, I know it's off topic, but how do you feel about Reed Shepard as the 6th pick? So, and then you clarified that you watched the draft episode, so I won't tell you to go watch the draft episode. Reed, I think from what I've seen, and in the draft episode I said I hadn't seen much to this point, right? There will be an episode on Reed. I suspect if the Raptors, the draft lottery will help calcify some of the coverage, because if the Raptors fall out of the top 6 in the draft coverage, then there's a whole slew of prospects I won't be doing deep dives into with scouts. But if the Raptors keep top 6 or higher, definitely we'll do like a full episode on Reed, if not like Reed plus a couple guys. So that coverage will be coming, but yeah, Top Shot Tesla says, would be weird resting now, considering we're pretty much locked into the six odds. Yeah, but you never know. Guys can be really careful about stuff, and so can the franchise. So I guess it's something we'll wait on. But yeah, Jordan Poole was fun to watch tonight. I thought he was kind of... There's funny parts of his game. He's very adventurous as a, you know, lead ball handler, as a decision maker. He's no longer coming off the bench. He finishes with 29-12. He's pretty good. And honestly, like, you know, I said quickly had a couple splits. Man, Poole, that one split he had where they were running like that, the cross screen action at the top. He took it wide. The Raptors sent two guys to step up. He split it like football gather into the lane. Big step, takes the bump, finishes with like the reverse inside hand lay. Just really nasty player sometimes. It is like my great hope that Jordan Poole sorts it out. And we all know what it is. That's my, because he's so talented. And his idea of what a person can do on the court is like rambunctious. I like the way he tries to play basketball. It is to some degree like as if Steph Curry wasn't superhuman in his shooting capabilities. Is because Jordan Poole is a good shooter. He's just bound by like expectation, or like I guess relativity. You know, Steph, he ascends past any expectation. He ascends into his own realm, kind of like Caitlin Clark to some degree, right? Like Caitlin Clark, and congratulations to South Carolina. That was the better team today for sure. But Caitlin Clark, I don't know if she'll be the best player in the WNBA. I don't know about, like, I know people have different ideas about who the best college player is, but like the way she plays, she does kind of reshape or make people reimagine what that position looks like. And that doesn't mean she's a, you know, a more resilient driver than Juju or something, or a better like all around player than Paige. Some people like Paige. It's just like there are people who kind of break conventions. And Steph definitely did it for the men's game. And Caitlin is just kind of like vertically stretching the court in a way that the women's game, maybe the level that she's taking it to, is pretty nuts. And Jordan Poole is a guy who I think has the right mindset to like change the game. It's just he's maybe not like a generational talent. And I like that. I think that's kind of like, that's an awesome like thread to follow, you know? I love people who play the game like that. Coco says he's very animated, as in looks like he's in an animation almost. Yeah. Some of the things he tries to do, and like he's very big eyes, big mouth, you know, like very expressive face. He's definitely like, he's made for high definition cameras. He definitely, like seeing him react to plays or like pull something off is pretty good. Rahul has an interesting thought here. Says, I wonder why Ochai's shot hasn't translated from college. He's literally a three-point shot away from being a solid rotation piece. Yeah, that's kind of fun. I tweeted today, and not even like a three-point shot, right? It's just like a catch-and-shoot three-point shot. Yeah, I tweeted 4 hours ago, or actually almost 5 hours ago. Ochai really is a catch-and-shoot jumper away from signing 3 to 4 contracts in the NBA. I really do believe that. He defends his position. He does it well. He's a willing cutter. He's not like a tragedy finishing at the rim. He's not a high-level finisher, I don't think, but he's certainly not a negative there. He's pretty neutral. He gets, and a catch-and-shoot jumper, because he really is a positive on defense. He really is. I've seen pretty good diversity as far as like the matchups he's been able to take. I've seen him play a lot of different styles. Like he's been kind of like, you know, when he's guarding down, can be a tough, sticky guy who it's just like tough to get past. When there's guys who's quicker than him, he can kind of play in space and allow a bit of a buffer to recover into. He knows how to play with the guy behind him. He knows how to play guys into help. Like all that kind of stuff is really important. He's also an athlete who can act out a bunch of different defensive actions. He can be a guy you just maybe not in a starting lineup on. Well, definitely not in a starting lineup on a good team. But as far as like, if he's like your eight, if he can shoot it and he's your eighth man and your number one option for guarding another, like, you know, two, one through three guys isn't there, he's really, really nice to step in It's just that he's not shooting the three. And he was, you know, he was fantastic shooting the ball in at Kansas as he went on to win. As he went on to win the championship, right? Like, he, that was the defining feature of his game. It wasn't his defense at Kansas that everybody talked about. He was a heat pump, banging triples nonstop, you know? So it's, there's more of a hitch in his jumper now. I think it might have to do with the extra distance, might have elicited a change from college to the NBA, and that change might have complicated some of his mechanics. He's pretty slow on the pull. It looks like it can be inconsistent at times. And all those things mean that, like, even if he did have the jumper, he wouldn't be able to, like, crank up the volume to where he's, like, a super sexy three-point shooter, right? You know, like, we see that happen with even IQ quickly. Pretty slow on the pull. And that affects his volume, because it's like Darko said, a guy who shoots it that well. Like, let's see 10 of them. Let's see 10 of them. You know? So the speed with which you get off the shot is obviously very, very important at the NBA level. I'm not saying anything revolutionary here. But Ochai, I think that there is a bit of a difference as far as, like, the mechanics from college to the NBA, and some guys, it doesn't translate. The reason why I wasn't worried about Grady was because Grady shot a lot of NBA length threes in college, and he can be, when necessary, a catch high, keep high guy. His shot prep is unbelievable. He can get that thing off pretty quickly. And even when he came into, you know, the preseason, you're watching him come off of, like, an Iverson cut, catch the ball, running full speed to his left, turn, there's a guy in his face, like a hand in his eye, and just launch from like 18 feet as he's fading. And he hit two of those in a row, and you're like, okay, this is a guy who, when he has to hurry the process up, he can do it. Ochai, I don't know if that's there. But even still, if he was just like a guy who, it's like that PJ Tucker type thing. Now, you wouldn't have PJ's career, obviously, but the ball finds you. There's a shot there. Can you shoot 38 to 44% on those wide open catch and shoot triples? That's your spread year to year. Can you get your shot to that point? You're going to sign some contracts in the NBA, and not 10 days. If you can't get it to that point, maybe not. I'm sure he works on it, like, really hard. I'm sure he's always working on it. But yeah, Ochai, it should be interesting. There's a lot of stuff to like, but some things are worth liking more than others on an NBA court. Like, screen setting as a guard is a really unique, cool little thing. Fred VanVleet, for example, is a fantastic guard screen setter. Those screens would mean nothing if after he plants it, he couldn't peel out of it, set those feet, catch, and bang a triple. Some things are more important in the NBA than others. And so Ochai is good at a lot of stuff that would immediately become, like, way more compelling and appealing if he was, you know, catching those threes. Phoenix Play Z says, I'm not a fan of volume threes from one player. I prefer a distributed level of three-point attempts amongst the team. Yes, but some of that has to be, like, defensive response. So, and I do agree with what you mean. Like, it's heliocentrism. There's not, I don't know if there's, like, a big selling point that anybody has. I think Houston could have won the 1 year. It fell apart for them in a terrible way, but they were as close as anybody might ever get. Just, and I don't know if there's a player like Harden coming along, that level of Harden, right? When they missed those 27 threes in a row, Chris Paul got the injury. That was big time heliocentric play. But as far as, like, the level of, quickly should be able to get, like, 12 three-point attempts up in a game quickly, like, every so often he should be able to get there off of his own dribble, and if other teams allow it. But the, and then once you get that big drastic response, then you start playmaking out of it. The difficult thing is, like, since quickly is a little bit slower on the pull, teams, they don't have to commit as hard to it, and they can kind of like, you know, be a little bit like toothless with it, and you can still send a big out to him and quickly might not get the room he's comfortable with to get that shot. And so teams don't have to commit all the way. And that's where like that maybe changes. Now, you don't want to be like, you don't want to be in the spot where quickly is going 12 every game. That's maybe a little bit silly, but I think quickly, as far as like, he could easily go to 12 if you don't give the right defensive response. That's what I mean. And right now, quickly is a little bit too slow on the pole that he can easily get to 12 if a team doesn't really come down hard on them, you know? But yeah, so you're bringing up another point, Phoenix. Quote, that's the point I'm trying to make. Usually when I see players on a heater from three, they start chucking even when they send more help. Yeah, that's not good basketball. You know, sometimes you take that heat pump shot, the heat check. Yeah, but yeah, it's really fickle. The relationship between, you know, volume is really, really fickle, you know. It's really interesting. But like, yeah, Tyrese Haliburton, sometimes he can be a frustrating watch at times because you're like, is the pull up three everything? Does it have to be everything, you know? And as you say, Helio offenses stink. I think it's really tough to win a title as a Helio offense. But I do kind of like watching Helio offenses sometimes. I just love a bucket getter and the guy who just absolutely shifts the defense into a total panic. You know, that's where it is. Rahul says, let's poach Chip England from OKC and Ochai's shot is going to get fixed. I know shot doctors, some of them players will say it's a super big deal. Like Drew Hanlon during RJ Barrett's second season, he got a lot of gas because, you know, RJ made that jump to like 38% from three. Nobody's talking about Drew Hanlon now, obviously, but it's just players, man. I don't, maybe England could completely turn something around, but that would be real cool if somebody did just kind of like make that happen. But yeah, tough to say. Quite honestly, Giovanni says the book's out on quickly with good teams. IQ is slow on the 3-point shot. So if you rush him or crowd him, he won't make the shots. Yeah, I think that there's been some games where quickly, you know, has done a really good job responding to that pressure. And I think that the most difficult thing for quickly as a Raptor hasn't been the blitzing. Because the Raptors, between like Kelly Olynyk and Scottie Barnes, typically or Jakob Poeltl even, have a pretty good release valve to some of those blitzes. If quickly just takes that escape dribble, draws them deeper, and goes over the top, you start playing 4-on-3. Especially Scottie more than anyone else, right? Like, let Scottie play 4-on-3, points per possession, going through the roof. But I think the most difficult thing for quickly to navigate right now is when there's pressure to push him downhill and he's constantly being put in a position where like he has to finish over trees or he has to like dribble back out and it would be flattened out against a big. And that's like the great equalizer for a lot of defenses in the NBA is, well, the offense, do you have the guard or the wing who can beat the big on the switch? To the tune of like massive points per possession. Do you have that guy? Not everybody has that guy, right? The Raptors currently don't have that guy. They have Scottie who can beat a guard. But as far as like a big on a switch, they don't have that guy. And on the other side, can your big, especially with like 8 seconds or less, can you corral guys? Can you hang in a pinch? That in the NBA playoffs, a lot of shot making, a lot of stuff towards the end of games comes down to that. And the Raptors lost a heartbreaker of a play-in game against the Bulls because the Bulls started switching Vooch onto Fred and Fred couldn't beat it. That is a killer. And that's the play-in. That's not even like the pinnacle, right? And like to his credit, we saw Fred beat big man switches in 2019 in the finals. Some of those Hail Mary shots that he hit where he ended up getting a finals MVP vote, which I didn't agree with, but good for him. he's done it before in a short period of time, but you know, sometimes teams can like flatten out possessions defensively, flatten them out and get you to that spot. And the teams that are like, we're glad we're here, those are the ones with like some of the best players in the world. They're like, oh, we will take this situation. Yeah. Phoenix Blazy also says, we've also seen Fred look very bad against an Embiid deep drop. That Philly series, he looked like he was like a college player. That was a crazy, crazy. Oh, I'm talking about the 2019 series for what it's worth, but he couldn't play against Philly in 2019. They'd funnel him middle, dead. Nothing happened. It was crazy, man. That was sobering because he had such a great regular season in that the more limited role that he was in. And then in the pull-up three in 2022, yeah, that was the knee stuff that everybody was concerned about. And then you clean up the knee, do all that kind of stuff. And anyway, Fred is in Houston. Houston has done better than expected, and I think Fred had a pretty good year per the numbers. And you know, I haven't been keeping up close enough tabs to know if like he and Jalen Green, the mentorship is going well or anything like that. I don't know, but yeah. There's been some like unbelievably heartening Fred moments. Most of them came in the championship run, and there's been some like damn Fred moments. But overall, I mean, just glad to have had him as a Raptor because his contributions to a title were remarkable. And he was always just like a massive impact guy. And the Raptors going from, you know, Lowry, who was like the ultimate impact guy, to a guy who's a little bit more muted in impact than Lowry, but still like anything you look at, all of the catch-all numbers, and I'm not a big catch-all guy, but some people are, they just looked at Fred as like, you know, a David amongst Goliaths. It was a really interesting. Sometimes I, you know, you wonder what a guy is doing all the time so that he's like, he's getting the gas in the catch-alls, especially since Fred was never like a big true shooting percentage guy. He, you know, it is just like catch-alls really value winning your minutes. That is what it is. But yeah, them's the breaks. That feels like a podcast, yeah? How's everyone feel about that being a podcast? I feel okay about it. We will be here later because it'll be Tuesday after I attend the game. The home closer, the final home game against Pascal, against Tyrese Haliburton, against a Pacers team that, quite frankly, is really going to want it. You know, they're really going to want that one. It should be a pretty exciting game. You know, I think it was, Darko was asked after the game, like, could you see Jakob do you see any situation for like the two guys, Jakob and Scotty, to get back into the swing of things? Like, is it possible? And he said he had no expectations. I don't think there will be a pizza party, but as we said, it's now a colloquial term. 3 wins in a row is a pizza party. Same way 13 is a baker's dozen. Make sure to like the video before you get out of here. Phoenix Plays E says, what do I expect the round one matchups to be? I think I'll do, like, Trey and I will do a more so like NBA-wide podcast as far as like kind of catching up on stuff like that. And we'll do a live one where we talk about some of this wider stuff, Phoenix. So we'll get into that stuff. But as for tonight, I'm going to probably call it quits on this one. But this stuff will be talked about for sure. And if you so choose for Indiana Pacers playoff coverage, go to Caitlin Cooper's Patreon. We'll do some work over there. Okay. Thank you very much to everybody for listening. And yeah, God bless. Like the video, subscribe, all that good stuff. Whether you got into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day and goodbye. Yeah, Eclipse Day tomorrow. Everyone tune in for that. Should be cool. I'm locked into it. Okay, bye-bye.